Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho. Friends, allow me now to introduce you to James Flaming Eagle Mooney, elder and Seminole medicine man. How are you, my brother?
Really good, thank you.
Well, it's good to have you with us. We also have Shahawin from New Self Love Foundation on the line, and we're going to get her daughter on here momentarily. By way of explanation, you know, I always kind of run this show about the spirit, and I called and talked with Shahawin earlier concerning another matter. I wanted to get in touch with Chief Rogers about something else, and she was why don't you tell James what we were talking about, and we'll go from there, and I'll get your daughter on the line while you guys are talking.
Okay. Well, my daughter is wanting to take part of my foundation work to Tennessee, and her main thing is that it's hard to find a church that there in Tennessee that will accept her because she is bisexual, and they have a small child that they want to teach about the Creator, plus, you know, about the Native way. She's been teaching her the Native way, but she wants her to have that part too, and so it was causing her some difficulties on how to go about doing it, and I just told her to find it in herself to just teach it the way it's supposed to be taught. And so my daughter is very interested in trying to start a church or a gathering so that people that feel like they're not for no judgment, you know, they don't want judgment. They just want to be able to praise the Creator.
And by the way, we've got Lisa on the line.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Lisa. Would you like to, tell James what we were talking about how you felt about the church and everything? You could probably do it a lot better than me.
All right, I can do that.
Before we do that, have we still got James on the line?
I sure am. I'm listening.
Okay, sorry about that. Good. Okay, we got everybody together. Sorry about the interruption.
All right, well, I, being that I have I'm gay and I have a partner, and we decided to have a child 4 years ago, and I was sitting thinking about it about a month ago about my child. She's 3 years old, and, you know, we wouldn't be welcome into the church society on a humbled level, you know. It wouldn't be something that I would like my child to walk into and then us not be welcomed, just so that he would understand and know and have the opportunity to go to Sunday school and vacation Bible school and have that type of growing up in a church like I did when I was a child. And being that I have a partner and we are in a relationship and we're gay, a lot of the religion factor in the churches frown upon that, especially where I live. So for me to walk into a church would be...
Where is it that you live right now?
I live in the Bible Belt of the United States.
Boy.
I live in Tennessee.
What racial background do you have?
I am, my grandmother was Indian, and my father's side come from England, so I have a little bit of Cherokee Indian and Choctaw Indian in me, and a little, some English, as far as I know, on my family tree.
Are you a federally recognized Indian by any chance?
Not at this moment, I am not.
Okay.
But there is enough that I could be.
Well, that to be part of the Native American Church or Oklahoma Native American Church, we don't care what ethnicity or what nationality you have at all, because we don't believe that the spirit picks a specific race in which it's going to reside with. And so
right.
The Native American Church, which is presently the only federally recognized indigenous religion, it's called the Native American Church, but Aqaba, that was actually incorporated in 1918. Now, and the reasoning for the development and the incorporation of the Native American Church was to save the indigenous culture of the United States, which is the American Native people. At the time, in 1918, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which was at that time influenced significantly by the Catholic Church and the LDS Church or Mormon Church, to actually outlaw the entire indigenous culture of North and South America. That was the intent. And when that failed, well, it actually passed the House of Representatives, but then some sense came into the Senate that you can't outlaw an entire culture. They killed that bill. And
right.
When that bill get... Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. When they killed that bill, the people of the Smithsonian Institute, who helped kill the bill, went to the medicine people of Oklahoma and persuaded them, in order to save the entire American Native culture, they needed to incorporate their culture under the name of the Native American Church. And that's when that happened, is 1918. Now, as at the chagrin of most of the Christian movement, the I don't know exactly what the thing is. It's just I understand this to be true, is at the time of the writing of the Bible, the original Bible, apparently some of the writers were just homophobic, for goodness sakes, and not only homophobic, but the, about the entire creation process, especially the power of woman to be able to create. There just seemed to be a movement to control anything to do with indigenous beliefs, as well as anything to do with the reproduction aspect of the human being. And so in relationship to all of that, in 1918, which was when the laws were trying, or when the Bureau of Indian Affairs, through the influence of these religious groups, and I might add there's other individuals or groups that were that make a whole lot of money by suppressing the indigenous cultures of the world, have
right.
all this influence onto the legislators going through the Bureau of Indian Affairs to outlaw the entire indigenous culture of North and South America. Failed. You knew more about this than anybody else. Went to the Indian population, the medicine people, and got them and persuaded them to incorporate the culture under the Native American church. Well, the moment that that happened, okay, and it was foreseen that then these same influences would do everything in their powers to negate the abilities of the Native American church to receive its constitutional rights. And how they did that is by saying that the only people that can possibly worship within the Native American church are to be, the only people that can do it, are people that are on Indian reservations, where the Bureau of Indian Affairs could control, manipulate, and dominate the abilities to the Native American church to be able to prosper and receive its constitutional rights. Because the Bureau of Indian Affairs oversaw the American Native culture on Indian reservations where the Constitution has no authority. And so when it was incorporated, the culture was incorporated in 1918, that scared everybody alive. And so they, the different churches used their political power to persuade the United States government to say that the only people that can possibly practice this religion has to be on federally recognized tribes, which is totally unconstitutional, totally illegal. But that's what people bought because of the powers of these churches. And because of the commerce abilities to make billions of dollars at the suppression of the Native American culture, they were able to persuade the DEA, the IRS, and all these other people to buy into the lie that in order to practice the American Native culture, you had to be a federally recognized Indian. And then in 2004, well, actually started in 2000, the state of Utah, which is very LDS church influenced, attempted to literally outlaw the Native American church, started in 2000. And in 2004, the Utah Supreme Court said unequivocally, "What are you doing here? You cannot do this." And so that is where you had a legal determination that you do not have to be a federally recognized member of a tribal government in order to practice the Native American church. And so from 2004 to where we are now, which is approximately 7 or 8 years, of 7 years, it's taken this time for people such as Blue Otter to be able to voice or have the voice to be able to say the Native American church is open to anybody and everybody, regardless of their race. And if you have a church, you can worship and you will receive equal rights and equal protections under the law, equal to what the Catholic Church is experiencing and has been experiencing, and the LDS Church has been experiencing. And that's a fact. And now, when people, because at for the last, well, since the Ocala Native American Church came involved, is that when people would be arrested for smoking cannabis or for carrying cannabis or transporting cannabis, they would be arrested, and then they would say, well, this is my religion. Here's my card. I'm an Ocala Native American Church. Well, what would happen is the prosecuting attorneys would contact the Bureau of Indian Affairs or another organization called NARF, Native American Rights Fund, which is basically controlled and manipulated totally by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And to prove that point is the leader of NARF, Native American Rights Fund, is a temple-going Mormon by the name of John Echohawk. And up to a few months ago, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the director of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, was Larry Echohawk, another temple-going Mormon. And so with those influences, that when a prosecuting attorney would call the Bureau of Indian Affairs or NARF and ask, oh, is this a bona fide Native American church? Guess what they would say? No. And so what would what now has changed after a stand of so many good people and courageous people, now when the prosecuting attorney says that the Ocala Native American Church is not a bona fide Native American church, you know what the judges are saying now? And they'll say, well, where do you get this information? And they say, well, from the Bureau of Indian Affairs or for the Native American Rights Fund. And the judge will now, judges all around the country are saying, what does a federal department have to do with authorizing what is a church and what is not a church? Or a law firm that is benefiting immensely financially by suppressing the Native American culture. And that's what's being said now. So what I guess I'm saying to you, I don't care what race you are. I don't care what sexual orientation you are. The Ocala Native American Church welcomes you with open arms, and you will receive, by law, all the rights and freedoms that a Catholic church does or a Mormon church does.
See, that's awesome, because there, in the religion factors, there was a term that I heard a couple years ago that has really stuck with me, and that was religion breeds fragmentation. And when I look at religion, and you look at the Baptist, and you got the Southern Baptist, you got the Baptist, and then you got the Methodist, and then you got the Lutheran, and where I'm at in the Bible Belt, when I look at that and know where I live, and then I look at my child, I think about that because it's a big factor in how a person is conditioned to what they know. And it's sad when you know that most religion nowadays will shun a person and throw judgment upon them when it is clear and stated in the Bible that we are all God's children and thou shalt not judge. You know, so the churches of the United States, to me, have a huge problem. And even though I want my child to be involved, it's because I want her to have that influence so that she can build and go the way that and believe how she wants to believe. You know, I'm not saying I want her to go and be a nun or anything like that, but, you know, as for me and the ways I believe, you know, I'm a very spiritual person. I believe in a lot of different things, and it's kind of like a multiple mesh of everything, a piece of this, a piece of that, and a piece of this, and you put it together, and it makes a whole, and that's where I find myself in my belief. And then I look at my child, and I'm like, well, how do I convey that to my three-year-old, you know, when it's time to explain to her, well, who was Jesus? Who was Moses? You know, how the world was created per the Bible. And, that's where my problem comes in with the churches and the religion, because it's just not a right thing, because I know that I'm not the only gay couple in the world that feels this way. Now, if I still live in the metropolitan city where I lived before, in West Palm, Florida, in West Palm Beach, there are many accepting churches down there. But I took myself and moved off into the country. You know, so now I'm in a place of where, you know, I've often thought to myself, maybe I should just go and sit down with every preacher at all the churches and, you know, sit down and say, how would you feel if my family, would you accept my family into your congregation, just to see what kind of, you know, answer I would get from them. Because I feel that, let's say out of 100%, I would probably get 5% that might accept me, which that is a very low number considering the fact that we are all humans and we are all created by one God, you know?
I'm sure Unity in Nashville would open you with open arms. But let me, not to interrupt, but I've got a polemical, I've got a description, historical description of how I think we got here. And let me chime in for a second, then I'll shut up. This will take about 2-3 minutes. The back in the, I guess, the 1400s when the Bible was first introduced, I think King James was probably the first version. But it was translated from a stolen Torah scroll, the Old Testament was. And, you know, you're always cautioned, you don't study the Torah without a rabbi. And, you know, Christians, they, you know, it's a real mixed bag with them. They don't understand Hebrew history. If you look closely at Sodom and Gomorrah, you realize the reason why Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed was not because people were practicing alternate sexuality. It's because they weren't charitable. It's very clear. But you won't hear this coming over the pulpit. The other observation I made in studying ancient Hebrew history is that in the time of Jesus and before, there was a place around the temple called the Court of the Gentiles. At that time, and there is a resurgence of this movement today, there were people known as God-fearers who were not Hebrews. They didn't want to convert, a lot of them because they didn't want to be circumcised, but some of them just wanted their kids raised with the Hebrews, or they wanted to live there. They wanted to be citizens. And even today in Israel, you can get a card as a citizen. There's one of three things on an Israeli ID card: Jew, Arab, or Noahite. Now, the laws of Noah were established long before the Sinai covenant. And Christians don't understand that the Sinai covenant and all of those caveats against homosexuality, those are specifically for Hebrew people living in the land of Israel under the covenant. Nobody's doing that now. And it's so hard for me to get through the heads of Christians because it totally confuses them when I say, those things don't apply to you. You assume that they do. Even the Ten Commandments don't apply to you because are you under the Sinai covenant? And they'll say, well, no. And I said, well, then you're under the previous covenant, which is the covenant of Noah. And if you go through the seven laws of Noah, you know, they're not even really encouraged to multiply and replenish the earth, which is the argument against being gay. Those are for Jewish people. Those are for Hebrew people. So I think if people look a little bit into history, even Jews are confused about this. And the other issue is, anciently, I was reading one rabbi commented that the only people that were trusted to guard harems, were eunuchs. That was an old term for... not necessarily that they were castrated, it's that they weren't interested in women, and they were resolute, powerful guys, and the man would trust him to guard his wives. So that's a little cultural perspective. It's arguable, but I thought I'd throw that in, and now I'll shut up.
Oh, well, you're right. You're right about that because the people do misconstrue what is said, and that's why I said it's like being conditioned, because they will assume that it states how they perceive it, and
yeah.
then they will take that perception, and then they will take it out, and then whoever is in that congregation becomes a conditioned person into
yeah.
believing that. So,
right.
you know, in the time that we live in, it's very, it's just, you know, I know the old is dying and the new is coming, you know, the generations are changing, and it's kind of like we're in the between.
Well,
we're in the between times.
Another problem is Christianity, as it's styled today, really was founded by Paul, not Jesus. The idea that you're supposed to shun people that think different from you came from Paul. Jesus, he went out and you know, and he ate and drank with publicans, and publicans were hated. He associated with people, and people downgraded him because of it. And but like I said, you can't really go by Paul, and a lot of people are waking up to this. You get people like Dr. Bart Ehrman at over in North Carolina who lectures about this. But James, you had a comment and didn't get to talk.
Yeah, I think it's really important, and I know that any time a person states a historical fact that looks sadly upon a group of people, such as I have, like the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and the Catholic Church, quite often they'll take that that person is bashing that religion. I have no intent to bash or discredit anybody's religious pursuits, none. But I do have an issue when people within a certain religious set attempts to sway and belittle another religious organization through political and judicial means that are unscrupulous. I mean, it's just the way it is. And I'm not bashing the Christian religion or people that follow Paul or the Jewish religion or the Catholic religion. That is just not anything about me. All I want and I desire, and the way Aquila Native American Church is set up, is it is set up that it allows people of any race, any cultural background, to be able to receive the healing elements and the empowering elements of the indigenous culture of North and South America, that they can receive these benefits that these have without any regard to your social background or your financial background. People, Native American culture and its ceremonies are known that you can come into our ceremonies without any feeling whatsoever on how much money you have. They care nothing. They care about you're a two-legged. And as a matter of fact, they don't really care that much about the two-legged, because when you go into a sweat lodge ceremony, all of our relations on planet Earth are welcome to come in. You say Matakiasan, or you say you say all my relations, meaning every tree, every rock are invited into these lodges, into these ceremonies. And so I don't want to go down the road with people feeling and thinking that I'm negating their religious upbringing and upbringing, because that I'm not. But it is a fact of what I said, that the Catholic Church and the Church of Jesus Christ have actually done. But that is not condemning their religion. It is that certain policies and growth, just like a little baby, when they're growing up, okay, I mean, they poop their pants, for goodness sakes. They make all kinds of silly little things that they wouldn't think of doing as being a 20 or 30-year-old person. And you got to remember, the Catholic Church and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints are infant religions compared to other religions, if you think about that for a moment. And so they're just new, and so they're making mistakes, or they have made mistakes. And the Catholicism, what is so incredible about the Catholic Church, just in the last decade, within the last decade, the Pope, for goodness sakes, in his humility, went to the indigenous people of South America and of New Zealand and Australia and apologized to the indigenous people for the horrible things that people had done underneath the guise of the Catholic religion. I mean, to me, that speaks volumes on the goodness and the essence of every human being. And every religion and every church was spurred on of goodness. But something happens when certain people realize they have certain powers. They almost immediately start utilizing this power in an unrighteous manner. Okay, so what I'm saying to you is now, because of these sacrifices that literally...
Did we lose you? Yeah, you said we lost you when you said the sacrifices that literally...
That literally thousands, if not millions, of indigenous people of North and South America have sacrificed. And I'm not just talking about the Lakota Sioux or the Seminoles or the Apaches. I'm talking about the Huicholes. I'm talking about the indigenous people of the Amazon, primarily now the Amazon, because so many atrocities are trying to kill Mother Earth. I mean, this war on drugs, which is actually, I've never heard anybody say this large way, but the entire war on drugs is a war on Mother Earth, or on women, or on the indigenous cultures of the world, where basically all the religions of the indigenous people of the world is matriarchal. It's all about being comfortable with Mother Earth. And when you're a Native American person, you think of the Earth as what? As our mother.
As a mother.
And so, that's exactly right. So the war on drugs, in my opinion, is nothing but a war on women. Is nothing but a war on the indigenous cultures of the world. And so people, and you think about it, what is a mother? A mother is just, she emulates unconditional love. What is it the earth does? I don't care what you do to me. I still love you. I'll still support you by producing air, by producing the foods and stuff like that. You can rape me, which we do almost every day. You can malign me. You can do whatever it is. I'm still going to support you. But there comes a time that if you make Mother Earth so ill, it will retaliate. Not because it's actually retaliating, it's because of the corruption that you have put into it. It starts having tidal waves. It starts having hurricanes that are just unbelievably over. I mean, our human history, as far as we know, has never experienced these kinds of things. And the reason being is because we are suffering the consequences of ignoring the teachings of the indigenous people of this planet. And now it is coming back, and since 2004 now, you can practice your matriarchal religion that shows unconditional love, that is, or the way the spirit is touching your heart, and you can worship. And the United States government is mandated by law to protect those rights. And that is the reason that I heard over an excess of $35 million were spent at the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the organization called NARF, Native American Rights Fund, persuaded United States government, $35 million, to keep Oklahoma Native American Church repressed.
Wow.
Because what the circumstances and the beauty that can actually be received now. Now, see, and there's another thing about the Native American Church that is very intimidating to religions. And I'm not saying this to deride anybody's religion. I'm just saying this is a fact. This is what has been done. One of the most devastating things to the Catholic Church and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints of why they worked so hard to suppress the Native American culture is from a statement, what the statement that Quan and Parker made when the development of the Native American Church was beginning to be developed. He says the white man goes in their churches to hear someone talk about God. We go into our teepees to talk to God face to face.
Right.
That is, I mean, that undermines the whole concept of a pope, undermines the whole concept of a prophet. And so the whole concept of the indigenous cultures being able to practice their religion with that concept undermines the entire, almost the entire Christian principles. And so that's one of the reasons you have what you have. And so what, and then what is so interesting in the cultural religions or the indigenous cultures of the world, when somebody came to them with Christianity or with whatever, what do? They accept it because that is what has influenced you. And so, and at the same time of accepting these people's religious principles, such as Christ and etc., which is accepted, and I think ethically so for a variety of reasons. But when you tap on this aggressiveness and this ownership, that unless you believe my way, then you're going to go to hell, and I'm going to save your soul by killing you. I mean, what does a matriarchal society, how can they stand up to that when they have unconditional love as one of the major premises? They get ran over. You see?
Mm-hmm.
And so now, because so many people have stood up and sacrificed, there's a saying once that I was in the play, Julius Caesar, and there's a statement in there, and I was in college when I read this, and it sticks in my mind. In Julius Caesar, in the play, the Julius Caesar is walking out of the Colosseum, where they just saw all these Christians being slaughtered by lions and et cetera. And one of the scribes of Julius Caesar says, well, how does it feel like destroying the entire Christian movement? And Julius Caesar responds to him, and he says, for every Christian that lost, that gave up his, sacrificed his life in that Colosseum, 10 Christians walked out. And that is what's happened with the American Native culture, is that these people would not retaliate. They sacrificed their lives so that you and your and the listeners have the opportunity to join a church where there's no dogma attached to it, and you can operate and worship and be protected by the United States government as the Spirit dictates to your heart.
And how could we go about having the church where she's at started like that?
All you need to do is first become a member, and then you'll be shown how to do that from there. But you go to NativeAmericanChurch.org, and then go to where it says membership, and it's a piece of cake. You just follow the bouncing ball.
All right.
That is wonderful.
I was looking at.
And listen, while let's take a little break. When James was talking about, I'll let Robbie Robertson's song "Ghost Dance" do the talking here. It's about 5 minutes, and we'll be back.
Last kind of songs no more.
Now, I don't know if you all are old enough to remember the movie Little Big Man, but as you might recall, there was what Native people call a bird ash, which was a guy who preferred to do what girls like to do. And James and I were talking a little bit about this, and I'll just drop that little hint and let you guys talk about it.
Oh, you're talking. I think you're talking about the Shumish people in California, where the strongest and the most powerful of their medicine people were gay, and that's just that's a fact. And the story that was told to me, I don't know if I adhered to it, but it gave a reasoning why gay people were considered so honorable to be, is that they were an exhibition of the greatest courage that we could manifest. And what the reasoning was is that anyone that would deny themselves from the reproduction process would have to be honored, because it would have to be so devastating, and for them to be able to survive such circumstances and to continue to live, they need to be held in honor for the rest of their walk because of the courage that they had to keep on going and keep on moving on.
That's right. Hey, during the break, did you put your phone on speaker, James?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit different than... Yeah, this is something, you know, but, you know, all you have to do is just put in gay Native Americans in a Google search, and you'll see a Wikipedia article about Two-Spirit people. You see a Huffington Post article. There's a lot out there. There's even on YouTube you can put in gay Native American or Two-Spirits, and this is something that needs to be talked about. And you know, go ahead.
If I can go ahead, I really would like to really share this. I believe that we're, as a human race and human conditioning, to me, all of this stuff about homosexuality and what herbs are bad and good for you, I mean... To me, the whole debate is ludicrous. I mean, we're all one, for goodness sakes. We're all from the Great Spirit. And because of circumstances that life presents itself, why and how we are conditioned to discredit someone's beliefs or their being because they are different from ourselves is just ludicrous to me, okay? And one of the wonderful things about the indigenous cultures of the world is they accept you, accept life for what it is, period, and honor and respect it. And I no longer have anything to do with the managerial aspects of Oklahoma Native American Church. The churches themselves are what we manage in Oklahoma Native American Church, and there's a board of advisors that run it. I have nothing to say about the management, and the only thing, they put me out to pasture, and all I do is go around blessing churches at different, and we have them all the way to Uganda. Africa, we have them.
Wow.
In New Zealand, we have them in Peru, and so the basic belief is that if you look into the church, you need to look and read and study the code of ethics, because all paths are accepted by Oklahoma Native American Church, including all Christianity, Hebrew. Nothing is discredited. It's all honored. And I like to say that, yeah, I implemented that, but now there's responsible people, you know, lawyers, et cetera, that are setting in there and making sure through legal, responsible manners that governments around the world, Aqaba Native American Church is also accepted and recognized by the United Nations as the indigenous representative or the representative of the indigenous cultures of the world. That is where we are now. And we've achieved that by going and utilizing the principle of forgiveness and love. It's like when I was blessed to take peyote to the white man. I was blessed by Leslie Fobel that did that, a Lakota Sioux, who is direct representatives. I need to share this with you. When I walked in to the hospital room where Leslie Fobel was to get a blessing, I did not know the blessing that he gave me, that's what he was going to do, because I was there for a different purpose. But when I went to him, I gifted him, which is a tradition of the indigenous cultures, is you gift the medicine man his medicine. In his case, it was peyote. And so I had a bundle of a couple hundred buttons of peyote buttons that I gifted to him. And I had never experienced this in my life. He took that bag from me, placed it over his heart, and he started to sob. I mean sob with gratitude. I had never experienced that in my life. And I was so humbled and so moved. I just said, I'm in a world that I have nothing to deal with of the gratitude the way this man showed for that particular medicine that he had devoted his entire life to. And so then he started to bless. He says, well, we need to get this blessing done, James. And I said, yeah, you know. And so he started to pray. And he was praying in his own language, which is the Sioux language. And after he finished, he looked at me and he said, you didn't understand a word I said, did you, James? I said, no, I sure didn't. Then he put his hand on my shoulder with his other hand grasping the peyote I'd gifted to him. And he looked me right in the eyes and he said to me, take this medicine to the white man, James. Now, you need to know, you just heard a song where it talked about his ancestors at Wounded Knee.
The ghost.
His direct ancestors were slaughtered at Wounded Knee Massacre in 1890, December the 30th. And he wants me to take the most precious thing in his life to the very descendants of people that murdered his people. That taught me forgiveness, the ultimate of forgiveness.
Well, that just shows there's a great healing going on in the sacred hoop, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I wanted to share some stuff about the LDS Church that happened to me. But I'm going to start with my mama. My mama was known as Nawasa Lightfoot. Her Christian name was Barbara, and she was born in Okolona, Mississippi. She was in the service and did a lot of military work. And after she got out of the service, she moved to Elko, Nevada, where she was a paralegal with Leo Puccinelli. Now, back in the 50s and early 60s, the cutting down of the pinon trees on the reservation was going on, and RJ, as we know, Rolling Thunder, was a part of trying to stop the cutting of the pinon trees. And so he went to that lawyer's office, because it was the only lawyer's office around there, to get help with the cutting of the pinon trees. And that's how my mother and him became acquainted.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then I was taken away from my parents, and I ended up in the LDS church, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I had visions and all this other stuff. When I started getting older, I started questioning in the LDS church why women could not be teachers and get up there and teach and preach. And, of course, into a lot of trouble.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't tell you that Joseph Smith ordained women to the priesthood and actually had a separate organization for them, but they forget about all that stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah, they told me that women could not do nothing like that, and I kept telling them. At that time, I was young and had not come into my knowledge that I came from medicine people, because I had been taken away from them.
That's right.
And
if I may, I'd like to interject something with this, please. Is that the Blue Otter just brought something up that's very really profound, and I'd like to elaborate on that, which is really quite interesting. Shortly before Joseph Smith was murdered, the Spring Conference, prior to him being incarcerated and then being murdered, he made, in their conference, their Spring Conference, he made, I believe, statements that signed his death warrant. And the statement is that the founders of the church, which was him and his counselors, and the apostles, needed to put down their pride and seek out the American Native people and their elders to learn how to progress. And on top of that, in the same talk, he said that the elders of the church need to go back to certain parts of Missouri or wherever it was and apologize for their inappropriate behaviors that got them kicked out of those areas. Now, it's also reported, and with some incredibly brilliant minds, and if you want to find out and hear the actual talk, you just Google Robert Bexstead and Mormonism, and you will come up with an actual recording of his statements of facts. And this is what he stated in that recording. I happen to be part of it. That's the only reason I really know about it. Is that he believed that Joseph Smith utilized first sacred datura, then he went and utilized Amanita muscaria. No, it was Amanita muscaria, which is that red mushroom with the white dots on it.
Yeah.
And then sacred datura. And he settled on peyote to receive his visions. And in the original temple, they were talking about vomiting and all these type of things. They were actually using peyote.
Wow.
Yeah. you Google Dr. Bechstein and Mormonism or something like that, and you will run across those that particular thing. And he has documentation that is undeniable that it's being true. And he doesn't mention anything about that spring conference. But there was a hatred or racism towards American Native people by a segment of the LDS Church at that particular time, probably led by Brigham Young, that did not like whatsoever what he said in that, what Joseph Smith said in that conference. And when they eliminated the use of peyote, according to Dr. Bechstein, in the temple, they changed and started passing out raisins, like the fruit of the tree of in the temple they talk about. Instead of peyote, they took raisins. They started having people take raisins. So just to kind of clarify, and like I said at the earlier aspect, every religion starts off with purity to it. But somehow every religion seems to go through a growth process where they really get goofy, you know.
That's right.
You know, and then on top of it, and again, I want to reiterate, is that the policies of the church, of any church, really doesn't tell what the essence of that religion is. And that's the reason I'm saying that anybody and everybody, if they want to be, if they're Mormons, if they're Catholics, if they're Jews, if they're Buddhist, if they're Islamic, you know, it doesn't make any difference. They're welcome into the Native American church, and providing they do not violate those code of ethics, and you need to read those things, then they are free to worship, and we will stand with them and to enforce the government to protect their rights to worship in the manner that they are worshiping.
By the way, if you'd like some more real meat on this subject, I wrote an article years ago. It's at prophecykeepers.com/mormons-fall-away.html. Let me give you some quotes here. Mormons were originally taught by Joseph Smith that someday they'd follow a future Indian prophet. And it was in the Book of Mormon, 1909 in the English edition, 1920 in the Spanish language. The original footnote by Orson Pratt was removed at that time. And in the mid-80s, the chapter heading in 2 Nephi chapter 3 states that the choice seer was Joseph Smith. But it can't be true because Joseph Smith had no native ancestry. Now, Joseph, in his final address to the High Council in Nauvoo, he was so fed up with the Latter-day Saints, he kept telling them, "I can't teach you truth. You shatter like glass. It's just impossible." He said that if Mormons didn't shape up, another race would be taken to another place, and they, not the Mormons, would redeem Zion or build the perfect society, which would be received by the Creator himself and visited by his representatives personally. Originally, the 12 apostles also stated in a proclamation to all the emperors, kings, princes, and heads of state of the world that at the time that the poor, degraded son of the forest would someday stand in majesty. Now, Brigham Young did follow him for a while on this. He ordered certain men to go and marry Indians. Unfortunately, on their way across the plains, the War of the Mormon Cow happened. That was witnessed by Crazy Horse. There were other problems too. But Brigham Young said that he warned Mormons that our hope lies with the Indians. The Indians will yet save us, and when they come, I fear that we will only follow them. And there's more information on that. What happened to me is in 1984, I had a dream, and I was just told that when I turned 30 years of age and had been in the church 7 years, something very important would happen. And I ran across when that time came, because I was born in 54 in December and the following March, just that very same week, the 7th anniversary, ran across a book in the Salt Lake County Library called The Keys of the Priesthood Illustrated by Lynn and Stephen Bishop. And that's all anybody needs to know to follow this trail of breadcrumbs.
Well, I had no idea there was so many LDS people. I'm in some ways I kind of chagrined that I even brought the LDS thing into it. But
I wanted to share my experience with them because I had so many questions about me having visions, and you have to understand this was before I realized that I came from a medicine family, and I had not even found my roots yet to start walking that path. But I was having the visions, and there wasn't nobody to talk to that could help me understand what I was having visions, what they meant. And so I went to the church with it. And so this is what they told me, because I was wondering because I didn't have a lot of understanding, I had a lack of it, I thought maybe I was a prophet, because I could see so much and I understood so much. And so when I asked them about that, they said, oh, no, there's no way you can be a prophet in the LDS church and stuff. And so I kept talking to them to the point that they took me to the council in Utah.
Well, you ended up in Salt Lake, and you were predicting the floods.
I predicted the floods.
Yep.
In Tennessee, which happened a couple of years ago, and they told me that I was going to have to stop prophesying because it wasn't allowed that women prophesied, and I told them I couldn't because it was so strong in me that I had to speak what the spirit was showing me. And so I got taken up there, and they talked to me. And
well, you met with half the general authorities and President Hinckley.
Yes.
Apparently they forgot about the prophetess Deborah, who was the ruler. She was the spiritual ruler over the Northern Kingdom.
But what was funny is, for me going up there, it connected me to my pathway because the only other Native person that had ever been up there to talk to them and speak to them was Roland Thunder.
So yeah, it's kind of like, you know, it's interesting that the state of Utah was the first state to outlaw cannabis, but to their credit, they're the first state to legalize peyote and for non-Indians. And we look to the church. Now, Dr. Charles Jotlohi Rogers, the chief of the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, is in contact with general authorities, and we've sent a petition. We can prove our linguistic Hebrew linguistic ties, and the church is beginning to look at some things. They're slow but sure. I think the particularly as they lose membership, they may be looking in some other directions. It's hard to tell, but
I
really feel an urge to support the good things about the LDS Church.
Sure.
And I mean, you know, I started this whole conversation out, or as we began it, that I believe that the war on drugs and the basic movement of the Christianity is a war on Mother Earth or on women. Okay, so then I want you to know that the state of Utah was the first state to ratify the woman's right to vote, for goodness sakes.
Yep.
And so, what you know, you walk on dangerous grounds when you're in my position to say anything negative about another religion or another walk of life. And I guess I just want to say it this way, is that, you know, one of the most interesting things when I learned about the indigenous culture, and in this case the Native American Church, is I remember I asked his name was Clifford White Buffalo Man Jake. He's a Paiute Bannock Shoshone medicine man. And he worked with me for about 14 years, 15 years almost. And I remember I asked him about a question about, you know, about how I should do this. And he got ticked off. And he says, why do you ask me? You know, I said, I'm just a two-legged, just like you, and I might lie to you. Why don't you just pray? Go to the source and get all of the answers that you may have for any of your questions. Don't come to me. I don't know any more than you do. And that is the essence of indigenous beliefs. If you really want to know something, pray. Talk to the Great Spirit. You don't need somebody else to go through. And that's the essence of what is available to people now, is they have the rights, and they will be supported by the United States government as soon as more people become part of Aqua, the Native American Church, then the rights and freedoms of your desires to worship in the manner that you wish to worship in, as long as you don't violate those code of ethics. United States government, mandated by law, is to support you and protect you in your beliefs, not go against you the way it's been set up. But now, because as more people become part of Aqua Native American Church, they will, the government will not be working against you. They will be there for you. And if you go to that website and you study the videos, the last video that is published on there, it talks about, if you look at the words, it talks about James Mooney. The last video shows where the United States government came to the aid rather than to discredit it. Came to the aid. And that's what's turned around now. It is slowly, but it is starting. Now the United States government is set there to protect your rights to worship under the protective umbrella of Aqua, the Native American Church. Anyway, it's been a little while. Blue Otter, it's really nice to talk with you, and I guess we've been on the line for a little bit more than an hour, and so I will say...
well, I appreciate it. Yeah, we got off in some directions, but, you know, I love Mormon folks. I just want to remind them of their history, and that could be said about just about any of the religions out there. And but there is a hidden history there, and if anybody should start to understand this, it should be them. And, you know, they are starting to talk about it. I about once a year I go and look around, and they're beginning to wake up. We sat down about 4 years ago with the church historian. Well, he asked for a grant for the Sundance of Gardner, Colorado, and he apparently took a hard look at some things, and he said some things before he left office. And anyway, appreciate you, James. And
you guys know how to. I would love to communicate with you more, and it would be beautiful to have you and your energies brought into Aqua, the Native American Church. And it's very easy to do that, and if you want to have an independent branch once you are a member, then that can easily be brought about. Okay?
good talking
awesome.
To you.
Thanks.
And James, we'll let you go, and Sherilyn and Lisa, we'll hang around for a while, and I'm going to hang up on James. Thanks a lot. And folks, if you're listening out there, if you have some questions, we've got about 27 live listeners, and the phone number is 347-996-3318. If you'd like to talk about LGBT spirituality, the native viewpoint, give us a call if you have any questions or comments. And even if, you know, if you want to call us up and curse us, that's happened once before too. You know, I had somebody call me up and tell me I was going to go to hell, and went, "Oh, okay, whatever." But Lisa, what do you think about what you? Am I getting your name right?
Yes, you have.
Yeah.
Right.
What do you think of, so far?
I actually really did some intaking there. That that was very interesting what I heard, and you know it. It all. He even said conditions, because that's how I feel about the religion of Christianity and how it spread. And I really am going to take a look into the church that they have. That's sounds like it is something that should grow a lot bigger than what it is, because a lot of people need that and not be like they are and shut down. Because I believe people are so shut down from how they are conditioned into believing how someone perceives it. And
I know, though, they've been conditioned this way since birth. And it's in a way, it's not their fault, but sometimes I was taught, you know, you can be victimized once, but you know, if you're after that, it's kind of your fault. So we have to learn to a little bit of history and stand up and defend ourselves and help people understand. That doesn't mean they're going to understand, because they're so vested in this, and they it's just hard for them to get outside their paradigm. You just keep coming around to Jesus, and you know, Jesus hung around with people that the other people didn't approve of him hanging around with. And you could also, you know, go back in the Old Testament and read about Sodom and Gomorrah. It's very clear the destruction didn't happen because they had a different view of sexuality. It's because they were uncharitable. And
correct. And it's funny you bring that up, because I actually read that about 3 hours ago, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I read exactly that, and that's exactly what I got out of it. And you know, I want to say I'm not knocking religion at all. I'm not knocking it. It's great to have faith, and people have a choice to choose what they believe in.
Yeah.
But I also believe that their perception will never change if something doesn't come about to change it. And
well, yeah, actually, the ancient Hebrews were instructed to mock or to laugh at people. No, I'd caution you not to, but you really should take them to task. You know, have your scriptures open and be willing to point to prove it to them. Because most people will believe what their preachers teach them, and I would encourage you to visit Unity in Nashville. I know they've got a church there. I think they've got one over here in Cookeville. I'm in Crossville, and but Unity, they're kind
of I'm not far from Nashville at all. It's like 45 minutes from where I'm at, and I thought about doing that in Nashville. But it would still, you know, it still leaves me open questions of what kind of answer would I get from that person. You know what I mean?
Oh, well, Unity, yeah, you wouldn't have to worry about the folks at Unity. They're kind of the heirs to the church, the movement that the founding fathers belonged to, the Unitarians. And
really?
Yeah. You could check into Unity there. They probably invite you to come speak.
Yeah, they. That could be true, because that's what happened to me.
By
any chance, do we have any callers? Because I do know that we have several people listening that might want to call in and talk and have a question that we might can answer for them.
Call in 347-996-3318. Give us a call. It's right there on the screen. We've got over 20 listeners on the 27 listeners, and get a call. Don't be shy. 20 live listeners. Give us a call, and even if it's a question on their subject, that's fine. We'd love to talk to you. And it's kind of interesting to find out these things, and the way you and I met was really wild too.
Yeah.
And I had let me tell the folks a story about I guess Susan Bluefrog said, hey, there's a woman in New Mexico needs to talk with you. And and before I called you that night, I dreamt I was at a bookstore, and there was I was just looking through the racks, and I noticed the door was a sliding door, one of those like a Star Trek door, and there was a deer that came to the door, and he activated the beam of the door open, and he ran away, and there was a little fawn, you know, right behind the deer. And the next day after I talked with you, I got on the Timbaron website, and I mean, you didn't even know that they had changed that picture on there, but there was a picture of a deer looking through a door with a little fawn behind it. And I went, oh, my gosh.
That's funny.
Well, you had some confirmation.
Oh, yeah. and then my friend Buddy, Chief Buddy up in Illinois, he had a dream about a whole bunch of roads and streets and stuff, and then he called me, and, you know, what do you think that means? And I said, I don't know. And then a couple of days later, I sent him a map of Timbaron because we were thinking about coming to visit you, and he called me back. Oh, my gosh. He says, I got on Google Maps, and I drilled down. He says, there was that map I saw in my dream. So, yeah, you know, it was kind of like Creator was telling you, you know, you've got to work together.
You know, right. So.
And we've done, you know, we've interviewed you before, and this was a great opportunity to talk about this subject. Because more and more people are talking about now, and it's even getting national attention. And I argue about this with my Christian friends, but I saw a documentary, you know, I guess a couple years ago about homosexuality in nature, you know, among animals. And, you know, and then they, you know, they dissected some of these animals' brains and found out there was a difference between the brains of these animals that behave this way and other animals. And there is a difference. You know, a lot of people don't want to accept that. And, you know, I said, well, whatever, you know, just, I don't care what you believe. Just don't use it as an excuse to hurt somebody else because of the. Well, when I worked at Boys Town as a family living teacher, they would have called this a negative differenceism, or the belief in a negative difference. It's just not good. And, you know, we don't want anybody to believe that when we're talking about Mormons or Catholics that we're pointing out a negative difference. We're just trying to point out what their history was and jog their memory a little bit and hope it
yeah,
may...
And when I was talking, I didn't really get to finish what I was going to say because after I got through talking to everybody in Utah, they told me to go do what I needed to do spiritually for myself. And
yeah.
That's what led me to, you know, that's what's led me to where I'm at now. And our goal is to build a healing center here in Alamogordo that people can come to and be able to stay for a week or two and get all their needs met so that they can be centered and understand what they need to do for themselves to be healed.
That'd be great. That would be and y'all are not too far away from James. I know he'd love to see you up, and he's up in Spanish Fork, Utah. Be a little bit of a journey for you, but especially from southern New Mexico. And he does get around. There's a branch over in Phoenix, and
I'm sure I'll be talking more to him because of me putting together this healing center, a church like that would be also probably appropriate for people to be able to worship while they're there.
Yeah, and unless I miss my guess, you know, if you're a federally recognized Indian under a certain title, I believe even if y'all were assaulted or hurt in a crime, it wouldn't just be a local or state crime. It would be a federal crime.
Right.
And, you know, you just people don't understand that Native people actually have more rights and have had for some time. You know, and thanks to people like Senator Daniel Inouye, who passed away recently, and you know, there's that story of Hawaii. You know, there, you know, Hawaii was literally taken over by the U.S. government just because a few white people went over there and were they became rich planting, and they just decided to invite some. They just decided to take over the government, and they were ripe for the picking. And the queen actually joined the LDS Church, and well, she was held in house arrest until her death. You know, so it's you know, it's all about, it just seems to be all about money
I think the times are changing too because of the energy patterns and us being in the female energy now. We moved out of the male energy on 2012, and we're now into the full blown female energy, and everybody mm-hmm. is. You know, everybody's awakening up to that, which we will see in the next several years. And people are going to become aware. And all of this, all the people that are confused about what to do and everything are going to become enlightened.
Well, and America's being warned. I saw a program just a couple hours ago Rabbi Jonathan Kahn has written a book called The Harbinger, and it is a bestseller. His DVD is about Isaiah 9:10. Once you probably just go to Google. I just go to my Facebook site, and you can see these links on there. You'll be absolutely astounded at the nine harbingers that have been given to the United States, warning them that we're on a decline and there's not much we can do about it. We might have been able to do something about it right after 9/11, but you would not believe the unbelievable detail to which and even some politicians on Capitol Hill are waking up to this. And if you're not familiar with it, you know, just go to YouTube and, you know, do a search for The Harbinger and look into this. Because we have been warned in this country, and that we're headed in the wrong direction, and not sure. You know, it wasn't any big news to us. It's what I've been telling people for years. And but I believe that certain people will be treated better than others, and I think it's our turn. And it's also, you know, it's time for Native people to be that light. Shining light on a hill that Americans originally wanted, the European immigrants that came here originally wanted to be and got off track for being. And as Native people, we need to serve as their conscience and remind them that they've taken some missteps and what they might be able to get back to their original set of instructions, as the Hopi would say. But hey, give us a call, 347-996-3318. And Shahawan, have you got any favorite Native songs I could play while we're waiting for somebody to call? Got anything in mind? I got quite a few here I could play.
Do you have any? Oh goodness, I can't think of his name.
I got quite a few from Robbie Robertson.
Let me look. I'm getting a CD right now.
If it's just flute music, I probably don't, but I've got
Robert,
some.
Mirabal?
Yeah, hang on a second. I know he's one of your favorites, and
years, and I love his song, The Band, because I think it really...
No, I sure don't.
You're going to have to get that.
Yeah, I uploaded 20 or 30 songs, and I thought we might play something here. It might... oh, gee whiz. You know what? Hey, let me call my friend Mark and see if he's there. I like him to do... Did Mark do a Mayan birthday reading to you?
I think he did, but I'm not for sure. But I know Lisa would probably like one, and that would be really cool.
Let me see if I can get Mark on the line. And because this is really fun. We did one for Chief Rogers when he was on the line the other day. Yeah, we'll see if Mark's around.
And we might get some callers, too.
Yeah,
I do know there's people. I know there's people listening.
Hey, Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, how you doing? I don't know if you were.
Hey, Mark.
Have you been listening?
I just started a second ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We've got you've done a reading before for Shahawin. We've got our daughter Lisa on. She's starting to do medicine work, and thought maybe. You could shed a little light on her path.
Okay.
Lisa, this is Mark Borcherding. He knows a lot about the Mayan birth signs and everything. Now, I know this is hard, but we are going to need your complete birthday and year, including the year.
Oh, that is fine.
Hold on. Give me just a second here.
Okay, when you're ready.
In the middle of something, so I got to... break out here and get to work and
I know he Chief Rogers was really astounded because he found out that my sign and Chief Rogers' sign were very closely connected and unless you've had a Mayan birthday reading, you just don't know what you're in for. So.
Yeah, I've never had one, so this will be very interesting and more than likely very invigorating. So I'm excited.
Okay. So actually, what I'm going to do is there's going to be two of them actually that I'm going to do.
Okay.
The first reading I'll do is with using the existing Mayan calendar is going to be using the traditional day count that they use. And so that'll be the first one. The second reading I'm going to give you is going to be with a Zulcan that has grown bigger, larger. And it just came around into consciousness here on Earth around 1998. And it will actually have three components, and I'll talk about those right before I do it. But let's do the regular traditional Mayan one. So give me your birth date, month, day, year.
That'd be March 2nd, 1980.
March 2nd, 1980?
Yep.
Okay. Now, do you know if you were born before or after sundown?
After.
And that's why I was supposed to ask. I usually get a hit I'm supposed to ask when it's after. So yours was definitely after sundown, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So in a regular traditional thing, your birth would have been on a day called Nine Kuak. And it's a day... the Kuak glyph is one that... as I've said many times on this show, because we see a lot of people born on that glyph, it and the Eat glyph, but Quakus, a lot of the white buffaloes have been born with that particular glyph.
Hey, was
almost
he Chief Kuak? Was Chief Rogers 9 Kuak? He was Kuak.
Yeah, I forget now which day number he was.
I
don't think it was a 9, but yeah, he was, because the white buffalo thing came up, and I usually mention it with this particular glyph because of that. Kuak is also...
Now we've even had white moose Sighted. Yeah.
That's funny.
So we'll go over a little bit what the 9 and the quok, which of those. 9 is the day number and quok's the glyph. And there's 13 of these day numbers and 20 of these glyphs that interlock and form a 260-day cycle. And so give you a little bit of information on kind of what each of those things means. The 9 has to do in the traditional readings with female power and authority, emotional stuff, intuitive and artist type things. So those probably kind of fit in with you pretty well. The quok energy, on the other hand, brings in that pairs it with the things of family, friends, even things like a group of teachers, the disciples, apostles, things at that level too of a kind of family, like a brotherhood or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Things with having to do with abundance of things, rain, water, stuff like that. It's also called storm glyph sometimes, and relates sometimes with lightning. In the if you go down to Mexico and you go into where the Spider Woman and all of that, and you look at the pyramid there, the Temple of Quetzalcoatl, will have these jaguar serpent heads, but it'll also have these other heads that are Google Eye things, and those relate to a rain or thunder type being associated with those. So that kind of gives you an idea of those things. Let me see. Okay, yeah, that's pretty much it. So let me look. Now we're going to go over and look at the newer one and see what it has. And it's going to have three components: a forward flow of time, which is the way we normally see time; a backward flow, and that's going to be more from the perspective of the next world cycle or the one where maybe you've just moved into, looking back towards your birth. And then the third perspective is going to be where these two time flows come together and merge at a sort of a bridge, a doorway, or a zero point. Okay?
All right.
So we'll do the first one here, and it'll be the forward time flow, and that one is coming up with a day talking about influencing things, arranging wisdom, so things with wisdom and influencing things with it, free will, opening up pathways to it, and truth. So truth and wisdom, courage, things like this. So this may have been certain aspects that may have been important to you since birth, you know, going forward. You may have remembered these type of things, or it may have been on your path for a long time. It can be also hooked in with things having to do with birthing, beginning of things, and healing of things. So maybe some of the people sometimes born with this are good at understanding or have an interest in learning herbal and plants, things like that for healing, or maybe even other forms of healing too, but a lot of times towards plant energy.
Right.
And also probably you either probably been doing it or good at it or been probably learning it, the idea of how to take this, all these things, and focus awareness and an intention into it.
Yes.
So those are all kinds of things that, now from the back, on the other side, flowing backward in time, you have energy that's about balance. If I picked one word, it would be balance. This would be things that in the last, how many years since 1997, 1998, or maybe after that, but in the, you know, recent years, this aspect of balance could have been becoming more and more prominent and important in your life. It's tied in with balancing, not just for the sake of balance, but completion, completing things, correct actions of things, doing things the right way, especially when things related to equality and equality that leads to peace is a big component. There's an element of childlikeness in here combined with in connection with the Creator. So I would say, you know, you probably have been finding your kind of childlike connection talking to Creator about all this stuff and learning about balancing between things. That's probably, I would suspect, becoming an important aspect of your life in recent years. Especially when it leads to kind of an aspect of one. You've probably been seeing some things show up a little bit in your life, too, about circles and spheres and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
You know, so if you've seen all those things, and but it's as a energy of a number here of dealing with dynamics and the quality of dynamics in that balancing. So it's not just balancing to be balancing, there's an equalness and equality in that balancing, which brings out the in any things that are polarized opposites kind of having them work with each other and create a balance. And, of course, when you do that, things tend to be peaceful.
Right.
Okay, so these two things now come together.
There was that badger.
So they come together, and where these two things come together, these form kind of a zero point or a balancing point, which is what a zero point technology is. Balance. It's tapping into the exact perfect balance of Creator. That's what it is. And that's one of the reasons they don't want people messing with it. It's not just about gas, selling gasoline and stuff. It's once you learn about this, it's not just getting energy, it's everything. And so it's a balancing point or a fulcrum point or a zero point. And so part of the reading I'm getting ready to do now is where your other two parts, your forward and backward flow, come together and create a balance point. And for you, it is about eagle energy. It's about creating, binding things or connecting things with the mind, visions, revelations, for the purpose and a lot of times of serving others, helping other people. There's a lot of things about energy of service here, especially as the service is focused on the healing, which remember we talked about that already, right?
Mm-hmm.
Achievement, generosity and things. It's a manique glyph, which in the Mayan thinks is, looks like a hand symbol. And it's associated with what they call the hand kabul. And it's one of the things where they said that his hands, you know, were great at healing. He could stop storms. He could do everything. He could, you know, another title for him other than Quetzalcoatl is Lord of Wind and Water. But one of the things, one of the story goes that there was a place where he literally pressed his hands down into the rock down there somewhere in Mexico and made an image of that. And you also see a lot of hand symbols show up in different tribal cultures all over the United States. One of them you might want to look at is at the Spiro Mound in Oklahoma.
Secretly taken to a place in Canada with a cave that had not only his handprints but his footprints, as I recall.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah, I'm told that the one in Mexico, they have one, and they carry it around, and they guard it 24 hours a day. I mean, no one gets it. It's pretty heavily protected, and it moves around quite a bit. I don't know how old it is, but I've heard stories about that one. So that's the Manique glyph, and even in its name, that sort of connects you to Blue Otter because the manique, the last two things are eek, and it's the eek glyph that's also associated with the wind glyph. So it's the wind part of the Lord or the wind and the water or the Quetzal part of Quetzalcoatlus. So the Manique has the eek on the very end of it. So there's a little bit of connection there between you and Blue Water. Now I'm gonna look at, I'm gonna look through some other things here real quick and see if see anything else here. 19, so that's gonna pair across nothing there really. Okay, let me look at your other cycles here. I'm looking through a couple of things right now on different cycles real quick. See if pick anything else up here. Okay. I can see where your ego energy we just talked about is going to be connected to all the things with cave energy. And this kind of connects back to the chief last time, too. He had something showing up with the cave. And there is actually a cave underneath the Pyramid of Teotihuacan at the Pyramid of the Sun. And it's believed that that cave has been there a very long time. And it's probably the reason the whole thing was built there. So, and there's all kinds of Spider Woman symbolism around there, too, which was connected to, like, the Spider Woman of the Hopi. And in this mural down there, you actually have spiders dangling off of her. And she also has these two pictures of these big guys on the side. I believe those two things below are probably like the Hopi twins at the pole, North and South Pole. And that connects that cave potentially to not only Spider-Woman and the twins, but the whole emergence story. And in some accounts, they actually believe this cave either is highly symbolic or in some people are theorizing it could be actually the physical emergence place. So and I suspect that would be important for Hopi and all those guys. So it, that might be something interesting for you to look at. It's connected into your ego energy.
And Shehawan's just told me that we're trying to get her... her friend Elizabeth to call. Elizabeth, if you can't get through for some reason, give Shahaman your phone number. I will call you. We've got about 10 minutes left, and I keep recycling the page, but I don't see any sign of anybody calling in. The number is 347-996-3318, and we're winding the show down now. Here we go. Elizabeth, is that you? Hello, Elizabeth, is that you? Who's calling? Area code 360, caller, are you there? I can hear you typing. Okay, that call dropped. Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, trying to get Elizabeth on the line. And, Marguerite, if you can maybe get her phone number, we can... we can call her.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? What does that sound like to you, Lisa? So far, does that?
That actually nails it to a T for me because.
Yeah, it does.
I've been screaming balance. I have to find my balance. That's where I'm at right now. I feel like I don't have balance to do that connection, so that. When I make that connection, like he was saying, it won't just be some of it. The door is going to blow wide open, and it's just going to go from there, you know. And I know that. And with having a three-year-old and then having three dogs and working and, you know, sustaining the house, I'm having the moments of not being able to find that balance. But I think I've come up with a great idea. I'm going to start trying it tomorrow. Actually, believe it or not, I'm going to start getting up like two to 3 hours prior to the whole house, so that when I get up, it's quiet because I have a racy mind, if that makes sense. So if I hear things, if I'm trying to make my connection and do my meditation, it only takes one noise to draw me, you know what I mean? It just takes one little thing, a footstep, a dog bark, and then I'm like, okay, go back, try again, you know?
So hey, by the way, we just have Jeff Standing Tall Gardner is on the line. He's one of the founders of Aquava. And sorry to interrupt, Lisa.
That's all right.
Jeff, and I sent you Elizabeth's number.
Oh, okay. Say hello, Jeff.
Hello, Jeff.
Standing tall.
Hello. Like I said, I was just calling in to say hello to all of you, let you know we're all thinking of you and praying for you out here.
Oh, great. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Now, there's some things that were going on that you had messaged, some urgent political alerts or something going on in your neighborhood, Jeff?
Which ones was that are you referring to?
There's several,
but really what we got going on, the biggest thing is we got... What's that?
Yeah, go ahead and speak up. Just get as close as we can to the mic.
All right. I was just saying the biggest thing we got going on out here right now is we've got a little girl named Amberly Downey who's currently, she's in the final stages of brain cancer. And if we could get a shout-out and let everybody know to just pray for this little girl, we could really use them prayers, folks.
Okay,
we'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate you. We're trying to get Elizabeth online. I'm going to dial her. Standing tall, you're welcome to stay, and we're going to try
What's her name again? It's Healing Circle. I mean, I'm going to post something and ask them to do the prayers right now. What's the name again for the girl?
I love you all. We'll talk to you next time.
What was her name again, Standing Tall? Amberly? I'll find out.
I think it's a Kimberly Downey.
Kimberly. Yeah, I'll find out for you. Still,
there's a couple of Facebook things I could post on to people that do healing prayer group things. So maybe I can post something there.
Still trying to get Elizabeth online. Last call failed. Elizabeth, if you're listening, be sure and leave your phone off the hook. We're trying to get a hold of you. Says we're trying to dial. Well, shoot.
Well, she is in the UK. So.
Oh, it's
not that Elizabeth.
Oh, it's not that Elizabeth? I thought you were calling that Elizabeth. Okay, well, no, she's not in the UK then. Sorry.
Yeah, we can't call out of the country. We'll try it again here. Call failed or wasn't on it? Oh, wait a second. Okay, we have Elizabeth on the line. Hello, caller. Area code 306. Yeah, that's supposed to be
Elizabeth. Elizabeth, are you there?
She's supposed to be on the line. Well, I'll be darned. Okay. I apologize, folks. Sometimes... there's problems. Elizabeth, we've got you on the line. Speak up, sweetie. I'll be darned. Well, that's too bad. 2373. Yeah, that's her. Hello, Elizabeth. Are you there? Huh. We can't hear her. Well.
She may be coming in on one of those bad connections. Every once in a while I've gotten those, too, where either the mouth or earpiece part doesn't work.
Yeah, I'll try. Let's try one more time here. And hang up, Elizabeth, if you're listening. I'll try. There we go. Hello, Elizabeth?
The number you have reached is not in service. Please check the number and your call again.
Well, that was...
The number you have reached is not in service. Please...
Okay, I get your point. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, this is the number that that you gave me that ends with 2373, Shahawan. So
306-628-2373.
Yeah, 306-628-2373.
Maybe you dialed it wrong.
I don't know. I put
it on that phone number today.
Yeah. That's the 306-628-2373. And yeah, that is the number I'm calling.
The number you have reached is not in
service.
Wow.
Oh, well.
Please check the number.
Well, she's listening. She can call us at 347-996-33. Wait a minute. Hello, is this Elizabeth?
This is Elizabeth.
Oh,
hi, Elizabeth. Sorry.
That her
I think
number?
You, it was 360, not 306.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, she gave me 306. Well, Al, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Where are you calling?
I'm calling from Lacey, Washington.
Oh, okay. Well, Shahawan, go ahead and you guys kibitz.
All right. How are you doing, Missy?
I'm doing good. Hello, sister.
I wanted to know about your walk. Did you go do it?
On my what was that?
Your walkabout.
Oh, I did, for Idle No More.
Yes,
I did.
Could you talk a little bit about it?
It was awesome. A lot of the brothers and sisters came, and we walked a mile and a half from one end of town to downtown and had our signs and drums and songs, and it was one of the first ones here in Washington, so in Olympia.
Can you tell the people that are listening what Idle No More is? Because some of them might not know.
It's kind of a grassroots beginning of reminding people that we need to take care of Mother Earth and to heal her and to take care of our water and our environment and not to let the big companies take over, and where it's happening all over the world, the Canada and the U.S. and the rainforests in South America and everywhere, that we are destroying Mother Earth. And it's Idle No More is basically saying we are not going to sit by and watch this happen anymore. And for everybody to pull together and pray for Mother Earth and pull together and do something together in peace.
I think that's awesome. And
we have
a minute and 24 seconds to go. So could you tell the people a little bit about your experience when you came down here to learn circle medicine from me?
I did. Yeah. I wanted to learn more of what you had to teach as far as circle medicine, understanding more about energy.
We can run over time. Just take your time.
Okay. learning about the male and female energy and how to read that in myself and in the world around me, and how to draw on that energy and how to heal yourself as well, like opening the spiritual doorways of what we have as our existence. And Shahawan, I spent a week with Shahawan, and I think we slept maybe 2 hours out of the whole week. We were so busy teaching each other, basically.
the teacher became the student just as well.
Yeah, we didn't get much anything else done, that's for sure. So learning to recognize male and female energy and the shadow and light and where we are in our thought process, and if we change our thought process, how it changes the world around us. If we're in negative thought all the time, then that's what we bring to ourselves. You know, if we're in positive thought and love and continuation of that love, then that's what we put around ourselves, and that's what we give others that are around us. Gosh, there was so much. I didn't even know.
Well,
much work we did.
take time. And while you're thinking, Jeff sent me a little message. He said the following words break my heart. He says, please, if there's anything anyone can do to help this beautiful six-year-old little girl and her family from Santaquin, Utah, please do. This little gal truly is an angel. I wish each of you could meet her as I have and realize her true beauty. From Dustin Downey, he says, my little girl, Emberly, E-M-B-E-R-L-I-E, her cancer has spread throughout her brain and spine. She is terminal. We are in need of help with her final expenses. Any help will be appreciated. She has a bank account at Wells Fargo under Emberly Downey. To donate, you have to use her name, Emberly, E-M-B-E-R-L-I-E, Nicole, N-I-C-K-O-L-E, Downey, D-O-W-E-Y, and her account number, 709-241-2779. And that is on my timeline, and I'm sending a copy of it over to Shahawin.
Yes, and I'll post it on the foundation's website.
Good deal. Did you have any other thoughts, Elizabeth?
I think the most profound thing that I learned with Shahawin is to be able to read the aspects of ourselves, from the mental to the physical to the emotional and spiritual, and how we place that in our thoughts and lives every day.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Have you got any favorite Native music? I might have it to play for you.
Well, one of my favorites is Douglas Spotted Eagle.
Or
Mary Youngblood.
Yeah, sorry, can't help you.
Mary Youngblood.
I really need to get more. You know, there's so much Native music out there, and
music and such beautiful music.
Well, Craig Kies wrote music about James Mooney. He wrote an entire album, and on the way out here, we're going to play a little bit of Craig. Some more Craig Kies music we played at the beginning. And it's if you all are ready to go, I'll go ahead and spin it. It lasts about 7 or 8 minutes, something like that. Is everybody
great,
ready?
It was great to talk to you, Elizabeth.
You too, sister. I love you, Shahawin.
I love you too.
All right. Well, appreciate everybody.
Lisa's still online?
Yeah, yep. I'm listening.
Okay.
I'm the listener. Thank you for having us.
You bet. And
it's not easy. I'm grateful for this life, for the chance to behold your face again. When my sacred journey's over, when it all comes to an end,
as Blue Water, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws,
your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
you.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?